We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Let's start around the show. Hughley in with you today. We're going to try to have a good show, have a good time today as normal. And
Try hell. We're going to rip this thing up. Your boy's back from the river now. Come on.
There you go. There you go. I know you got these hot takes
to spew off.
I know you've been listening. I know you missed J.J. Watt. You missed all that. We'll get to it. But we're not going to be tone deaf. We ain't going to put our head in the sand. As J.J. Watt said last week, if you like how I did that. The number one thing that is happening in this country, I think we all see it. It's on the TV right now. Everything that has happened due to George Floyd and due to everything that has occurred. We're seeing athletes. We're seeing everybody speak upon it, talk upon it. I know you're on vacation, Clint. Where did this take you? Where did this take you when you first saw it?
Well, I mean, I think it's a reality check. It's an eye opener, man. And I think, you know, growing up, I think there's so many different perspectives out there right now in the world according to how you grew up. And for me, man, it's pretty simple. I mean, growing up in Baytown, Texas, I may have a little different perspective because it's a very diverse city. I grew up, you and I talked about many a times, I grew up in a huddle. I grew up in a locker room. I grew up in a city where I can't relate to what you as a black man have gone through, but I'm aware, maybe a little more aware than other white individuals out there. I think it's just a reality check. And for me personally, it's first and foremost, it's a reality check in terms of the system's broke, man. You know what I mean? The system is broke, and until it's aggressively overhauled and held in checks and balances, we'll be in the same spot we're currently in the future. And ultimately, for me, that's where it all starts. The system is broken, and until that is aggressively overhauled and the individuals are kept in check, and it's going to be it's going to continue to occur. It's a reminder of that. It was obviously extremely, extremely tough to watch. And it continues to be tough to watch what all's going on in the aftermath.
You know, I look at this and I think we got a real powerful chance to have good conversations to where we can really learn from each other. And that's not just, as we hear a lot, white folks learning from black folks. But I think black folks can also learn and understand maybe what is in the mindset of some white folks and why they may react a certain way and why we all react. And I look at this situation, and I hear what you're saying about the system being broken. But, man, to me, it comes down to a lot of the little things. The little things that we can't get to that then makes it difficult to even get to the bigger stuff that we're talking about. When I say the little things, like I'll give an example. Like when you were last here, we had a conversation of an effect of the coronavirus to my son, my six-year-old son. He's in kindergarten, man.
Right.
And it was his last day of school, and he was really, really sad because he couldn't say goodbye to his teachers, and he couldn't say goodbye to his friends, and he was emotional. And me and their mom were like, man, this is tough. And I shared this story, and I saw a lot of people respond back and was like, man, I know that's tough. I can relate to that. My kids were really sad too. That's a relatable story. And I felt really good talking about that with the people, and people could relate to that in the same way. And there's no thought to that conversation. But we got to get to a point where that is a conversation that we can have. And also me, as a 36-year-old black man that's got two boys that he's raising, and one of my biggest fears is my kid turning 15 sure. or 16 because he can drive and he can do stuff without me. And watching that man get killed with being choked with the knee on his neck for 8-9 minutes, urinating on himself, calling for his mother with how, as a grown-ass man, how big of a deal when you're that weak you've reached the point to call for your – we have got to get to a point where I could come on here and tell that personal story of fear of how I feel, just like the one I told about the coronavirus with my son, and they both be looked at as, man, I can relate to that, I can feel that, and not one of them be I can relate to that and the other one be controversial or, I don't know, we may lose some people if he talks about that. The little things, somehow those two things have to be able to have that conversation with.
Yeah, and that's the toughest thing is when you get into race relations in our country, it's tough to have the open dialogue because people are raised so differently and people have so many different opinions based on how they were raised. It's hard to have a very constructive conversation, man. And when I talk about the system show, for me, it's you know, that I've got two cousins that are in law enforcement. You said you've got
one of my closest cousins is a police sergeant in Kansas City.
Right. And as I mentioned, I grew up in a very diverse city. And so I don't know what my cousins go through every day when they put that badge on and what they're up against and the danger that's involved. I don't know what they're up against. I don't know exactly what you, again, as a black man, I don't know what you're up against either. I'm aware of both situations, but I know this. I know this, that when someone that has the responsibility to protect and serve has the ability to put their knee on someone's neck for damn near 9 minutes and kill them, and coworkers stand around and watch it and are more concerned with blocking a camera angle than telling my man to get up, then the system's broke. And until that's broke, show, I know this, your little boy is going to experience what you're afraid of him experiencing until that system is fixed from the inside. And I've been a guy that, and I've seen the criticism on social media about, you know, white guys and white gals with platforms, you know, not necessarily speaking up. I've been very quiet. One, I was on vacation.
That's a good conversation.
Yeah. I was on vacation with my lady and on the river. And so, but when it's, nobody, when I look at it, first of all, I think Twitter is more for fun. I personally stay away from things that.
Were you quiet on purpose?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. Like, I don't, there's no way that, I don't think anything constructive could be done from me being vocal on Twitter about this particular instance. Because to me, here's to me, again, know where I come from, know my background. I'm not the guy that played ball and I was born and raised in an all-white community, played on an all-white team, and then went to college and figured things out. I was born and raised in a very diverse community right here on the outskirts of Houston, Texas. I'm at a point where I feel like I'm aware enough, and you tell me, being a black man, you tell me, I just don't think anybody in the black community wants to hear how saddened or shocked or how much hope or how somebody's praying about. I just don't think that's where this problem is at this point in time. They want people to, as my man Marcus Spears just broke down, literally broke down on the show and so beautifully relayed the message of, I think they want people to be against it, and the other stuff tends to fall on not deaf ears, but seems to be somewhat hollow, if that makes sense. And I just view Twitter personally as a way to where it's just hollow to get on there and retweet Tony Dungy. To me, in my personal opinion, it's hollow to just get on there and retweet something or just knee-jerk reaction to something when the emotions are high to tweet. I also think it's irresponsible to get on there when you do have a platform and knee-jerk react to some things. And so I'm just very, very careful for those reasons. I would say that I've been quiet on purpose, yes.
Yeah, and see, I think with some folks within the black community, that's been a thing of,
I just went down and bought a salad, man, and I looked up, and my man – Dr. Rudy Rasmus, St. John's downtown pastor right here in Houston. You know, first thing he said when he was asked, you know, what do? He said, you know, we've got people that aren't minorities, people that aren't people of color have to speak up and speak out. And I don't disagree. I agree wholeheartedly. I just think that if we're going, when you have a platform, if you're going to do it, you need to put some thought into it.
Yeah, and I'd say how you feel.
Yeah.
Say how you feel. And I think sometimes some folks in the black community, we should step out and maybe take the thought of understanding why some folks aren't saying anything. Because I think there is to a point where you just say, like, hey, I thought I knew this person,
mm-hmm.
and this is something that is so painful to me, and you got nothing on this one.
Yeah.
I could see you commented about the shooting in Vegas. I could see you commented about, but you ain't got nothing here. But I think one of the mix-ups is, well, let's talk about it, right? I've had several of my white friends hit me up, Clint, and be like, I just don't know what to say. I feel like
that's
I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to – and I just say how you feel, right?
Yeah.
Like just say how you feel. But get an understanding and not just think it because, you know, Clint didn't say nothing overall that he supports this or condones it. He has his reasonings and to hear it out.
I feel like I have a responsibility because there's a platform involved. I have a responsibility to be well thought out, to be productive in what it is, and to not knee-jerk react to certain things that stir emotions in extreme ways. And when you're talking about race relations in general, that stirs emotions across the board in crazy ways. And especially right now in our country, it stirs emotions in some really, really, really extreme fashions right now. And I just don't think that's the time or place for me personally to have done it. To each their own. I don't care. I don't care who does what. To each their own. I just personally choose not to use Twitter. You know, the same place that I talk about riding a Peloton this morning to have those kind of conversations, if it makes sense.
But I think, especially what we do, I think people want to feel like they know us. And I think us having this conversation, and I think a lot of people having this conversation with each other right now gets us to a place. And as I've said, man, of all the big stuff, man, like we got to get to a point where we all can look at that situation and watch it and don't turn it into politics.
Yeah.
Don't turn it into something that it isn't and look at it and say, damn, that is just tragic.
And that's tough in today's world because the outlets and the political side of all that, you know, there's so much gray area involved that it's hard for everybody as a whole maybe to come to an agreement. But show, this is one of those for me, man. When I watch it, if that don't hurt you, if that don't move your emotions and strike you in a different way than the things that have happened in the past strikes you, then man, it's tough to understand.
But that's the issue. I don't know that it does with everyone. Mm. I don't know that
everybody does. I know it has. I'll promise you that. I mean, the conversation I've had about it, man, it's obviously hard to watch, and it's not just another problem in our world.
I appreciate you for having this conversation.
Yeah, I love it. I want to have more of it.
And I think it's real, and I think we can learn some stuff, and I think we can learn from each other, but we don't learn from each other if we don't sit there and say nothing, act like nothing happened.
That's right.
You know what I mean? All right. A lot happened last week while Clint was gone, and he's got all these damn takes he wants to get off. We'll get to that coming up next. Clint Sterner, run the show. Hughley in with you today. Clint, you was out. Yeah. You was out a little bit. You was on that water.
Come on,
and you missed some of the action that happened last week. And I know you got these hot takes to fire off. And one of the big stories last week was J.J. Watt. He spoke to the media for the first time. And then this was, I think, the biggest thing out of his press conference.
No, I don't think that's necessary. I think that I fully understand and respect the situation that I'm in at the moment and what's happened in the past few years. So I'm not going to sit here and and demand anything because I'm going out there to prove what I'm worth. And I believe that's the right situation for everybody. I think if I went back and asked for an extension, more money, anything right now, I think that would be the wrong move. And so I'm just going out there and trying to prove my worth and to help this team win games and do everything that I can to earn and make sure that these people know that I'm worth it.
As JJ said, he ain't demanding no contract, baby. He ain't going in. He got 2 years left on his deal. He ain't demanding it.
I can't sit here and look you in the eye and tell you I don't greatly appreciate that. In a world where, and I understand why athletes hold out. I told Joey Galloway back in the day, I just didn't understand why in the hell he held out in them Seattle days, early in Seattle days. I think did he hold out a whole season? He was one of the, I can't remember if he held out a whole season, but he held out a long time. And when I was in Dallas, Joey came to Dallas and we talked about it. And I came to a new understanding of you're in your prime a certain number of years and you gotta maximize your earning. And so I understand, show all of the I gotta make as much as I can while I'm still healthy and while I'm in my prime. And so I understand why guys will hold out, but I can't sit here and tell you that I don't respect JJ Watt for understanding that he's had a hard time staying on the field for 16 games over the last 4 years. He's had a very, very tough time contributing for more than nine games in a season. And being aware of that to the point that he's like, let me, here's the deal. I gotta earn my keep. I gotta prove that I'm worth a new contract. I gotta prove that I can stay healthy. I gotta prove that I've still got tread on the tires and gas in the tank. And so, man, I love the fact that JJ Watt put it that way.
Let me put it to you at this one, because we thought about a lot of stuff through that. And it looks like he understands his situation. But what do you think about this though? You think he think to himself, let me see what these jokers is going to do. They out here trading away all pro wide receiver. Yeah. I got a little leverage. Yeah. I got a little power. Maybe I don't want to sign him. Maybe I want to see what these cats is going to do. Well, I want to see what kind of team we got.
Well, JJ's no fool.
Oh,
no, now.
I just sound like a preacher.
JJ, you were coming. You were coming with it. I hate that I cut that off and didn't let you keep preaching. No, man. I JJ's no fool. I think we've heard JJ Watt consistently talk about winning a championship. Hell, we had Booger McFarland on this show a few months ago, and Booger said the one thing that JJ has left to prove is one that he can win a Super Bowl and get that ring, but that he can carry a team to that ring. And a big part of carrying that team to the ring is being healthy for 16 games. And J.J. Watt is one of very few defensive linemen in this league that literally, if he does stay healthy, people would say that he helped carry the organization to a Super Bowl ring if they were able to get to that point. And I don't think J.J. Watt's a dummy. I believe that J.J. Watt sits around and goes, yeah, I'm aware of what's going on with the organization. And yeah, I would like an opportunity that if the Texans aren't going to be able to get it done, I would like an opportunity sooner rather than later to take my talents elsewhere and try to get that Super Bowl ring, show. So,
because that's what it's about for him right now.
I agree with you. He's been letting it go.
Like, I got to get it. I got to get that. That's what I wake up here for.
Well, I think that we talk about national narratives a lot about Bill O'Brien from a negative light, Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson. I think there's, if you ask about J.J. Watt from on a national level, like, yeah, he's a great player, one of the greatest of all time, Hall of Famer, but will he ever be in serious competition for a Super Bowl championship?
He ain't even played in the game to get to it.
Nope, ain't played in the big dance, right?
Yeah, he ain't played in AFC championship game, the game to get to it.
That's right.
And he's starting to get to a place a little bit where it seems like, do you think of J.J. Watt about his greatness in the years he won the 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards? Or are we starting to get to a point where his injury history is almost getting up there with, like, what's the first thing you think about with J.J. Watt? It's getting close.
Right now?
I think it's still, is it injuries?
Yeah, it's injuries for me.
Wow, yeah, not his greatness. And that's something you want to turn around.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no arguing the greatness, and I think when it's all said and done, when he hangs up the cleats, I think the big picture of J.J. Watt is going to be how great he was and where he fits into one of the greatest of all time to put your hand in the dirt at the defensive line position. Hell, he's one of the best to ever play on the defensive side of the football at any position. And that's how J.J. Watt will go down in history, no doubt about it. But as you sit right now with the fact that he hasn't been able to stay healthy damn near at all over the last four seasons, when that's the case, and so you stack on top of it the way that the pass rush totally disappeared last year when the most recent injury took place. Yeah, I think when you talk about J.J. Watt now, that the conversation needs to start first and foremost with, can my man stay healthy for 16 games and then carry a team in the playoffs? Absolutely.
Yeah. Another big thing, man, I know you love quarterbacks.
Always.
We had Hall of Famer Warren Moon on, and I posed him the same question I asked him last year about Patrick Mahomes. I said, would you be shocked if Patrick Mahomes never won a Super Bowl? He said he'd be shocked. I posed the same question to him about Deshaun Watson. This is what he said.
Yeah, I'd really be surprised. I'd be more surprised than shocked, only because you just don't know what's going to happen with Bill O'Brien and the way he handles the personnel there in Houston. They've been kind of up and down in a lot of different areas. They haven't had a consistency there that you need to have, a core group that you need to have in order to win a Super Bowl. And I think that's what Patrick so far has had at Kansas City. You know, he's had the same offensive coordinator. He's had the same head coach. He's had the same quarterback coach, and he's had the same group of receivers around him. And I think all of that helps as far as creating that continuity and that chemistry that you need in order to win a championship. So as long as the Houston Texans stop making all these changes that they're making, I think they'll be able to create some of that same continuity that will help Deshaun win a championship.
I like it. I like it. I mean, look, when
would you be surprised? Would you be surprised if Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, I mean, when I look at it, show this is such a cold take, right? Is like, I mean, yeah, I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised if Pat Mahomes wins another one. I would be surprised if Lamar Jackson ever wins one. I'd be surprised. I mean, those are like, it's so damn hard, and I know people don't like to hear this because Bill O'Brien uses it. It is so damn hard to win four consecutive games versus the best of the best that, yeah, I would be surprised if Deshaun Watson won a Super Bowl before his career was up. Yeah, and then that's no slap in the face to Deshaun Watson. That's just, it's hard as hell to win a Super Bowl. And as a quarterback, you're so dependent on those around you, from the play caller to the quarterback coach to the offensive line and the wide receivers and the tight end group and running back. You're so dependent on those guys that it is just, it's rare that those stars align. And when they do, you got to make hay with it right now. And the change in Houston is a concern offensively. A lot of turnover, lost one of the greatest in the game at the wide receiver position. Right now, where the Houston Texans sit, the concern is definitely that turnover.
We talked about it, and I said I'd be surprised if he didn't. Now, we all know I have love for
Deshaun. Yeah.
I mean, he's my guy. But if you really break it down, and I gave a stat last week, I looked at this website. They had the top 25 or the top 11 quarterbacks in the last 25 years. They had them rated, the top 10 of them won Super Bowls.
Say that one more time.
They had the top 11 quarterbacks in the last 25 years.
Yeah.
10 of them won Super Bowls. It is a show, like, elite quarterbacks in this time, even with Tom Brady winning six and having that dynasty. Rodgers has won one. Brees has won one. Wilson's won one. Peyton's won two. Kurt Warner was on there. Eli wasn't on it.
Oh, he wasn't
only person. Okay. Only person that didn't win it was Donovan McNabb on the top 11.
Wow.
They win them. They went when you are an elite quarterback. Now, if you don't believe that Deshaun Watson is elite, then that's a different conversation. I think this kid is elite and will continue to grow to that point. And they just seem to win them in the last 20, 25 years.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I definitely, you know, where I sit on with Deshaun Watson. I mean, I think he's one of the great young ones in this game. But it's, I just know as a quarterback, so much has to go right around that guy. And when the Texans are, the head coach is jumping around between head coach and play caller, the head coach, play caller, and GM. Now he's head coach, GM, and a former graduate assistant from Penn State, Tim Kelly, that's been with Bill O'Brien the whole time, is now the offensive coordinator. You know, you trade away one of the best receivers out there, and you bring in two different style receivers and add them to the bunch. I mean, it's just a lot of change, man. It's a lot of change. And usually the one that feels that change the most, as we see it, as we watch games, the one that feels that change the most is the quarterback. And so as great as I feel like Deshaun Watson is, as valuable as it is to have five offensive linemen from last year returning again and getting that continuity up front, as valuable as it is to have multiple weapons across the board and depth the receiver and tight end position, I mean, those are all great things, but it takes time for all of those to mesh and understand each other and bring the best out in each other. And until that happens, the quarterback is the one that feels it.
I got a story to tell.
Oh, I got a story to tell.
Clint's going to be laughing at me. Bridget's going to be laughing at me. All the listeners going to be laughing at me. This is probably going to show you a little bit about me. This is sad. Thank God for my wife.
Scary is what it is.
We'll get into that next. All right, Clint.
Let me hear it, man. Let me hear it.
So I had to get a place down here for a little bit, you know, till the fam comes down. I had my own spot, man. I found a nice spot downtown, right, man? A nice little spot by Memorial City Mall. I was about to get, man, bad hanging out, bougie. Man. Yeah.
Yes.
I was feeling it, man. Is that a bougie area?
It sounded like it.
It
wasn't Baytown.
I mean, I looked around. It looked good, baby.
I take it you didn't look in Baytown.
Nah. or Pasadena, where you from.
Pasadena, baby.
But, my wife was like, here, just send me the information so I just have an idea of where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for her. Send her the information. I'm driving. Heading here. She hit me up. Hey, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, baby, but I'm really looking a little deeper in this. And say, man, this spot you got, you just got a room. Like, this place, this whole thing ain't, like, your place. You just got a room, and the people who live there are still there.
Bruh.
You got an Airbnb?
I got an Airbnb, but I thought it was all mine. I'm looking at them. It said it has, you know, it can, you know, one bed, but it can seat up to three. And I'm like, oh, cool, man. I look up, I'm like, oh, this is nice, man. Living for it. I got everything I need, baby. This is nice. Nah, man.
That wasn't it?
Nah, I just had a room. I was in there with other people that was staying there.
You should have checked that out. That was probably somebody's guest house.
Yeah, I think it's just guest room. It's somebody's house. They still live there.
Yeah,
that'd
be
awkward.
And
they had two cats. Yeah, man. I would have never known if she didn't look. So we had to scramble, got out of that bad boy.
So now what we know is there's a reason why Courtney's making all the business decisions in your life.
Ooh,
there's a reason why your wife is making all the business decisions.
Can you imagine? Me coming in there with my bags, dog. Coming in
cat
with my
cat hair
bags.
Everywhere.
My bags. I come in. I'm like, I don't know. You just got that room. What?
Hold on.
Oh my God! Thank God we found it, man. She was like, I'm driving. I'm trying. Like, she was able to figure it out. Find me a new spot.
Right. You didn't get hit with a cancel fee. Too big a cancellation fee.
Oh,
did you?
I got it just in time. Oh,
okay.
I got it just in time. But I was like, I mean, could you imagine? I got all my clothes, baby. I'm rolling in here,
I can imagine, and I would have loved to come in here today, and you be staying with somebody with a couple in their house and two cats. I'd love to hear your version of the story and their version of the story.
I don't know what I read, man, but I read it said it can have up to three guests, and I got one man.
That's the luxury, like having a.
And I thought I found a deal. Oh, I thought I had a deal.
You did. You had a hell of a deal.
Yeah.
You'd had to sleep with one of the cats. That's the luxury of having, like, my girl's younger. And so the luxury of her being younger, man, is she's super savvy on all the Airbnbs and all
the technology.
Like reading, unlike me.
Wait a minute now. Wait a minute. I ain't going to let y'all young sunbucks
I'm talking
get all
about
on
me. I wasn't super savvy on like reading details.
Well, I mean, Airbnb can be confusing, especially if you don't. Yes, especially if you're looking to find. I'm not going shopping. Like, I'm not going to the Galleria and going, hell, I'm just going to walk around for 3 hours and see what I like. No, I'm going. I need a place to lay my head, and I'm going to click the button. If it looks good, boom. I'm not going to read all the details.
I
and
ran through the pictures and stuff, and I'm
bam,
like, oh,
done deal.
Bam,
so, yeah, that's how it works. But I'm going to tell you, man, she's on them youngsters, they get on that sucker, and they know exactly how to filter it all down to be exactly what you want, location, amenities, everything. And I would end up in a place like you.
You know, I was in. We was in.
I'd have probably tried to stick it out though.
We was. Oh well.
Did you go to another Airbnb?
No.
You got a regular hotel.
I got a spot. I got a studio where I'm good. But I was sitting there like, well, I mean, I ain't gonna just swallow this money.
Yeah.
If we didn't get, like, we sitting there trying to figure out if we gonna get this money back.
Yeah.
I said, well, I ain't going about to just spend double. So
how do you feel about cats?
No, dog.
We're not friends.
I know you love cats, Bridget. I'm sorry. Don't mean we can't be friends. But I don't want to be with no damn cats. Nah, man. Talking about it. And then she went on to read later and said, we keep them in our room when guests are here. And I'm there a long time. Like, no, I don't want them cats.
I'm out on that deal. That's wild, man.
It was close.
How can somebody be comfortable renting to a total stranger in the house with them? Yeah, that's interesting.
I appreciate the hustle. How could an idiot feel comfortable?
Yeah, good call. Good.
I wish you just saw me, man. I'm like, ooh, I got a spot. Somebody said, man, what the hell was wrong? Is wrong with you, show, man? I just skimmed through it. I saw them pictures. That was enough.
I tell you what I do. I just avoid it. Like, I avoid Airbnb unless my girl's making the decisions.
I'm
if it's me,
start doing it.
I'm going straight. I'm going straight. Hotel, motel, Holiday Inn, baby.
I'm about to start. That ain't me, man. I told her, man. I'm so because we were 5 hours away from the cancellation date time.
Mm.
Like, if I didn't...
Must be living right.
If we didn't look at it right, man, I was in Oklahoma like, what?
Yeah, you were en route, too. That's one thing. I'm sure a lot of listeners out there can relate to the Airbnb and getting hit with the late fees and not knowing not real sure where in the hell they're headed to. You took it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, I was, man. I scary at that time, man. Yeah, man. I'd have been in with them cats. I'd have been coming in here just in a real bad mood today. Hey, I do need to get to you, man. You've been a part of unions. You played in the league, man. What did you think about this proposal that the owners put out where, hey, man, if you make 30, you're supposed to make $35 million this year, you're going to make $7 million.
Yeah, you know what? The crazy thing to me about that, when I read all the details, show, was – that you're, and I understand that the thought process is that you essentially tax the ones that are making more money. You tax them heavier. And I understand that thought process, but when you're talking about Major League Baseball, you're talking about the guys that are going to bring in the viewers, help sell the tickets, what tickets you are going to be able to sell in these different locations where you end up playing, which who knows exactly where that's going to be, what it's going to look like. But those are the guys that you want to cut the most. That didn't make any sense to me. When I looked at it, I thought...
I mean the most.
Now I understand that there's a you know, the 500 and some odd thousand dollar guys that are making minimum, that there's, you know, upwards of 75-80% of those guys of the league, or those guys. Well, let's cut those guys that aren't helping you sell tickets, might not even be in the league next year. Let's cut those guys a little money, and let's keep paying the guys that are selling tickets, the guys that you need more to finish the season, hell, or to start the season if we're talking about Major League Baseball. Let's pay those guys. Let's not cut them to the point where, I mean, that was a 70% cut or something like that.
Come on, Clint. When I looked at that, I'm like, I honestly said, I don't think they want to see.
No, they don't.
What you knew that wasn't going to be. Like, they weren't even, Max Scherzer, I'm not even dignifying this with a response. Like, it was like when the NFL came out and said, you know what we're going to do to try to help hire black coaches? We're going to say you get better draft picks if you hired them. We're going to put that proposal. We all, what do we say whenever? There is no chance in hell that's going to happen.
Zero chance.
John McClain came up, there's no chance. And of course it didn't happen. They didn't even, they put it out there just to talk, because they knew that were going to happen. But you think this, you thought the players were going to go with this? Like, you,
no. Yeah. I mean, that's the back and forth here is silly. I understand it's business. You got to negotiate, and this is how negotiations work. Is ultimately you want to get to a place where neither party's happy, right? I mean, ultimately that's when you know it's the right decision. When both parties are unhappy, both parties got to give a little bit, and you can all agree to disagree, for a lack of better terms. But man, with the owners throwing that out there, you're not even trying to get the guys that carry the most stroke in each organization. You're not even trying to get them interested. You're not even trying to get those guys on board and get the ball rolling in the right direction. That the first thing that stuck out to me was the simple fact that you were, I mean, very, very, I mean, minimally cutting the guys that nobody even knows their name, and then you were cutting the other guys by 70% or 80%.
But still wanting them to play 82 games, which is half the season. But cutting their pay 70%, some people's pay 70%. Like, if you look at it, the players came out with their proposal this week.
Yep.
Their, what did you say? We understand it's negotiating. Their proposal, 114 games versus 82 of the season would end October 31st. They talked about just having, you know, getting paid basically for what they play, which makes a lot. You got one side coming to the table with stuff you can negotiate with.
Sure.
Stuff that makes this. Then you got another side of the table saying, hey, man, why don't y'all pay for about $70,000?
Yeah.
Why don't y'all come in and pay for about $50,000?
Yeah, I can't get down with what the owners sent to the players, but I know when you look at the Major League Baseball PA, when you look at the proposal that they've sent back in response, you said there's 114 games versus 82 games. Hey, as a fan, I'm in, baby. It's more doubleheaders. I'm in.
Playing more games.
Yeah, come on, I'm in. As a fan, I'm in. You obviously, the more games you play, the more money, the more revenue you can generate, the more money you can play the players.
More
so
TV.
As you and I sit here, I understand. There was also a right to opt out for all players, so that if there was some kind of, you know, there's players that have health concerns, or maybe somebody in their immediate family has health concerns, they could opt out if they so chose. Something about deferring salaries to 2020 if the postseason was canceled. Here's what I really like, though, Show. Here's the aspect of the most recent proposal that was sent from the MLB PA to the owners is compensation for players that agree to wear mics. I love this idea. Not necessarily the compensation. I don't give a rip what how you figure that all out. I'm just talking about players wearing mics in stadiums or ballparks where there are no fans, so it's going to be loud and clear. It is going to be loud and clear. And baseball being show a little bit more of a
chill game,
cool,
slow,
calm, and collected. Yeah. You know, your mindset, you need to be in that good mindset. You're not getting beat up. You're not getting your ankle twisted when you're on the ground and dog cussing each other. And the refs typically aren't making bad calls where everybody's right in their face and arguing and MF and everybody. I just think it's something that in baseball, with the current situation, with no crowd noise, it gives me something.
Added entertainment?
Oh, yeah. It gives me added entertainment, but it gives me something to listen into and say, hey, Show, man, did you hear what Bregman said last night? You know, as he's running down the first baseline after he hit that bomb or after he hit that double. I mean, it gives us an insight that we would never have if it weren't for the COVID-19, the negative aspect of effects.
Lining.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that I said it last time I was on air with you a couple weeks ago. It's like, I know this is a terrible time in our country when we're going through this coronavirus, COVID-19 stuff. But, man, we're gonna come out on the other end of it and go, hey, this happened, and it was really cool, man.
That we can add to.
Oh, yeah, keep that in there. And I just think that's one of them, Show, where we get to know these players. The golf match the other day. I mean, with Brady and Peyton Manning and Mickelson and Tiger Woods, the coolest part of it is, and my girl Lauren, her pops is a big golf. Like, he watches golf constantly. And he was stoked about it because now he saw the personalities of golfers that he always watches. he saw the personalities, them guys bantering back and forth. I just think that's super cool, and we as fans would get the opportunity to know these guys at a different level if they were mic'd up.
Being a part of these unions and seeing these negotiations, your gut feeling, you think they're going to get this together? Because they seem to be so far off. As we said, the owners are bringing I don't know what they bring it to the table. The players are bringing things where it feels like this is something where you can at least have a negotiation start, right? If the house is worth $250,000, the players are offering $245,000. The owners are offering $30,000. Like, do you think they're going to play? You think they're going to?
I do. I think they end up playing. I think that the way things are trending, and this is totally just knock on wood, things are moving in the right direction. In terms of the COVID-19 aspect of it, not only do I think they end up playing, I think they end up playing, and sooner rather than later, I think they have more fans in the stands than people think they will at this point in time. Yeah. I really believe that it's all going to work out. They'll figure this thing out. They'll play hardball. But look, here's the deal, is if they're going to finish the season by August 31, they got to get it. They got to come to terms by the end of this week. They got to figure something out. They got to figure something out by the end of this week.
October 31st.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, you said August. I was going to say August. Yeah, October 31st.
If the season would end October the 31st, the players have already said that they need, I think they would put the season starting in July.
For the next season.
They've already said that they need 3 weeks before the season starts. The only way that the 2020 season is going to end on October 31st is if they start sooner rather than later. They got to make a decision this week, my man.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I wonder, man, I'm so skeptical of the owners so far because they got the money, Clint.
Yeah.
They got the money, and a timeline is not.
They didn't get that money making poor business decisions.
A timeline is not that huge for them. Like, it is hard for me to be convinced that there aren't some owners out here who are thinking, well, I got to pay these contracts if we play. I don't get no gate. I don't get no parking. I don't get no concessions. I'm just paying these salaries. Where am I winning?
Yeah.
Where am I getting? Like, there is, like, so they got all the money. Like, these players, the average time frame from a major league player is 5 years. There's a little bit more reasoning for them because they missed out on an entire year's salary, Clint. That's a problem for some of these guys who 5-6 years is their time.
It's a big problem. Trust me. I mean,
imagine if you just missed a full year.
Yeah, no, I'm out on that deal. I mean, I'd have survived, but I would have had a little tougher start to life. That's for damn sure. Yeah, no, I mean, I think, and there's a lot of guys that are probably living paycheck to paycheck, and I know that's
really. Does that happen a lot in the league? Paycheck to paycheck.
Oh, yeah, the paychecks are big though.
Okay.
Yeah, them paychecks are big now. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of guys out there that need that money, we have a tendency to look at this and go, man, Alex Bregman probably doesn't need the money. You know, he doesn't need this money. There's a large percentage of the league that needs the money, and so that's a big part of it as well. I think they get it done. I think they get it done, and I think when it's all said and done, there's more people in Minute Maid Park than the 25% that overall they're thinking will be in the stadiums.
I hope so. I think there's enough owners that will say we can't have like what 94 had and lose fans and lose people because the owners, they may have the money now, but if they don't play due to financial reasons and not COVID-19, if it's because they couldn't come to an agreement here,
it'll hurt.
It'll hurt big time the owners and the players.
I'll be back though. I'd be back either way. I'd be back either way. I think we can cuss and discuss some things about how they couldn't figure things out and there's some problems, but Minute Maid Park will be full in 2021 whether they come to an agreement in 2020 and make this happen or not.
I hope so. One of the big stories over the offseason is how the quarterback of the Texans has been feeling about all the moves. I think we have some insight of where he is now. We'll get into that coming up next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof?
Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.